Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Jack Piatelli. How are we doing?
Fantastic.
Back in the studio.
Yes. It's nice to be back. Always great to be back with you, Kyle.
Guys, I wish you could have seen his face when he said that. I almost believed him. It was so close. But we brought in, Jack is a big proponent of the box game, as am I. We have a very interesting guest from the NLL.
Glenn Clark. I got to know Glenn while I did the broadcast for the Black Wolves when they played out of the Mohegan Sun. He is not only a great man, he's an excellent coach. He's been around the indoor game his entire life, and he's going to be able to give us some really good insights on the NLL, the new Firewolves team that's going to be playing out of Albany, and the benefits of playing box.
I'm really interested to hear his thoughts on the NLL being broadcast through the ESPN family of networks for the first time. It's going to be very intriguing to see how that develops in early 2021 and into 2022.
I think what it will do, obviously, it's going to expose the indoor game to more Americans. More American kids are playing box, but more will want to play box because of the exposure the game's going to get on ESPN3.
Well, let's go talk to him right now via Zoom. Albany Firewolves head coach and GM, Glenn Clark.
Very excited to introduce our next guest, the head coach of the Albany Firewolves, Glenn Clark. Glenn, thanks very much for joining us today.
No problem, Jack. Thanks for having me.
I was reading that you hadn't been to the States for 18 months because of COVID. So you were able to get back in time for your first scrimmage and your first game. So how difficult was that for you?
Well, it was a challenging time. It was all through the off season. So, you're making choices on draft picks, free agency, building your roster, maintaining your roster without really eyes on. So, the timing of it being the off season, it was business as usual to some extent, outside of the fact that you didn't really get to see a lot of guys, whether it was playing the senior A lacrosse in Canada or, we did fortunately see a little bit of PLL. So we could see some of our athletes in action, but, from a standpoint of an off season, it was typically a regular off season. You just didn't have eyes on, and I still haven't been to Albany. I haven't been to the building. I haven't seen it. So when we show up for our first home game or the home opener, that'll be my first time in that building since I played there 20 something years ago. We're playing out of the Times Union Center, so the primary building in Albany, and there's another arena called the Knickerbocker Arena, which we're going to use as a practice facility, as well as that's where they're going to do a lot of the youth programming out of. So we've got that up and running. I don't know to what extent, again, because I haven't been down yet. But I know that's what the plan is.
Coach, you're a Canadian guy. We have mostly not Canadian audience. So what I found really interesting about how everything works with box and indoor up there is that there's junior A, junior B, senior A, senior B. Can you kind of explain how that works and how that leads up to a pro league like the NLL and things like the Minto Cup and the Man Cup? Just give us the best explanation as fast as you can of how that works.
Yeah, I mean, all of our stuff is community based. So when players are young, they'll play for their town. So they play in their town all the way up, and that's their they'll have a house league there. The better players will play for the rep team, and it's town based all the way up in box lacrosse, and then from 16 to 21. Is junior aged players. So, you know, the top players and usually the older players of that age bracket will be in junior A. Junior B is a lot of times for the younger players and players that aren't as skilled. So they, you know, they separate that way. And then after the age of 21, there's the senior A and the senior B leagues. And that's where a lot of the pro guys will play in the summer. So that's the path. A lot of our junior A players will be simultaneously playing at school down in a lot of the NCAA programs. There's a lot of Canadian boys down there, including my oldest son. That's what he's doing right now. So that's the typical path for the box lacrosse player in Canada. It's more community-based versus club-based.
Are you seeing more American players kind of make that transition over? And if you are, like, why do you think that is in the past at least 5 to 10 years? Because you see a lot of guys get drafted and then they don't play because they don't learn the game fast enough. But some guys are coming up. And, I mean, I played senior B when I was, like, 29. And I was just the dumb American that got the ball to the guys that were good. That's literally that's a position, right? I was told that's a position in box.
It's on the lineup card.
Yeah. Okay. So American run here to here. How do you think that the college influence has kind of come into the pro league? As you're talking about PLL, but how is the college game of D1 athletes coming into NLL kind of affected it?
Well, I think it's good. I mean, I think we have to get more Americans into the indoor game. And I think part of it is happening through the success that a lot of the Canadians are having in the NCAA, particularly from an offensive standpoint, but a lot of the defensive players as well. So I think what's happening is a lot of the American coaches, players, athletes are recognizing that box lacrosse gives them a certain skill set that could advantage them in the field game. There's that. There's Americans that are coming up and playing in the junior A leagues. We've had a couple I used to coach junior A in the Beaches. The player that we have on the Black Bulls right now, Charlie Kitchen, came up and played with us in the Beaches. And that was through a Delaware connection because we had a Canadian that was playing down in Delaware and said, hey, Charlie's interested in playing box cross, could we come up, billet him, do all that stuff? And other programs are doing that as well. So I think there's just a recognition across U.S. lacrosse and obviously U.S. boxla is growing, but I think there's a real acknowledgement that the indoor game can not only complement the outdoor game, but also give them other opportunities, whether it's the NLL or playing in Canada and playing some summer ball to help enhance their outdoor game.
Coach, you had a storied career playing a number of years in the NLL, won 5 world championships, 3 all-stars. And my question is, has the game changed that much since the days you played and the game and how it's played today?
You know what? I wouldn't say it's changed a lot. I was on the cusp of real change in the game. When I started playing professionally and certainly all my senior A, we still played as 3 lines. So you would play as a 5-man unit, you'd play offense, defense. And then I played and went through that transition to where we are now with the offense, defense. So I kind of lived through that transition and played the majority of my pro career with that new transition. So the game and the systems haven't changed that much. I think like most sports, the athlete has gotten a little bit better. And I would say the biggest difference would be, the top guys when I played, would still be top guys now. But the depth of the players and the athleticism is better. Better sticks throughout the duration or the depth of your lineup, and better athletes, I would say, is the biggest change. Systematically, I don't think the game has changed that much. There's still a lot of similarities to when I played. It's coached a little bit more in detail. You know, all teams are using film, just like the progression of every sport. The dive is a little deeper in the scouting and the planning and the preparation, but the game itself, you know, from when it transitioned, when I played, is fairly similar.
When I played, we had three lines. We had, you know, the five guys would go out, you play offense, defense. Do you think the game is better suited the way it's played now, where it's more specialized? We have your transition guys, defensive guys, and offensive guys.
I do. You know, I'm probably going to get, well, it's an American program, so it's good. I was going to say I'd get bashed by some of the old school Canadians, but I do like this version a lot better. And the reason I like it better is the speed and the entertainment value. I think this product is, it's certainly a faster version. And with that speed, I think there's increased entertainment. It was a lot more, like basketball with the lines where, you know, you'd get possession in your end, you'd almost walk it up to half court, settle into a half court offense and defense. You know, you'd play that, the other team would get possession, they'd come in. So it was almost continual half court games when it was the five man units. Now, you know, transition is such a X factor in our game, and the speed with which you try to take advantage and make that work for you, not only from offense to defense, from defense to offense. I think that speed and that dynamic makes it a much more entertaining game.
And a much better game to play. A lot more fun for the players as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I just think you see, you know, when I first started playing, I was in, you know, I played offense all the time. And, you know, I was functional at it and whatever else, but I wasn't the offensive player that these guys are today, or even when we switched back in my day to offense defense. I mean, my stronger skill set was defense, transition, and the ability to play offense, but certainly not an offensive player. So now what you're seeing is best on best. Battle of will and attrition, and the skill that's on display, I think, is enhanced.
So let's say I'm a 14-year-old freshman in high school. Why should I play box in the winter if there's a box program around me instead of playing something like basketball or hockey? Why should I seek out box to make my field game better? And is it position dependent? Is it environment dependent? Like, what do you think is the thing that would make me want to do it?
Well, first of all, I'm a big multi-sport athlete guy. So I would never say, you know, don't play hockey, don't play basketball, don't play football, whatever that is. Because, you know, growing up, I played football, rugby, lacrosse, and hockey all at a high level. And in fact, I was playing university hockey and pro lacrosse at the same time. And then I was playing pro hockey and senior lacrosse at the same time. So I'm a big proponent of multi-sport athletes. But getting back to the box question specifically, I think the skills that are brought out in the box game, those tight windows, playing with speed, being able to understand when are good attacking lanes and transition. I think the box game does that. So I think that is the reason for playing the indoor game. I think it enhances all those skills of the field game. But I am also, you know, I'm a big proponent, because most players up here, you know, they'll play their box in their field in the summer, but a lot of them are hockey players all throughout the winter, and they'll play basketball at school and do things like that. So a lot of these kids have played multiple sports, and, you know, the specialization up here for the most part really doesn't start until junior. But even now, you know, we have a kid on the Firewolves who, he's on our holdout list because he's playing professional hockey. So we, you know, we have a lot of those guys that you know, we're sort of hockey focused winter, lacrosse focused summer. And I'm still a big proponent of the advantages of that multi-sport platform, but box certainly does enhance the opportunity to sharpen some skills for the field game.
What I love about box is, one, it's great conditioning tool for the players, because when you're on the field, you're in the action. There's really no time to think. You're reacting more than you're thinking, and you're playing, because when you're on the field, you're in the action. So there's never a dull moment when you're on the field. And when you're on the bench, you've got to be paying attention all the time, because you don't know when your next run is going to be, especially where it's specialized now. If you're the first or second offensive guy to go on the field, you know, if there's a turnover, so on and so forth. But for the younger players, stick skill development, great conditioning, vision, keeping your head up, being able to run with the ball, making the right passes in tight quarters.
Yeah, and we describe that too, you know, with our athletes, especially at the pro level. You have this nervous awareness for the whole game. Like, your mind and body and eyes, and you're never on break, you know, and you summed it well. Like, even when you get to the bench, like, guys will run into the bench, and then they're watching the play, like, when's the next transition? So it is this hypersensitive awareness of what's happening the whole game, whether you're on the floor or off the floor, or on the bench, sorry. So there is that, and I think the U.S. players are seeing that more and doing that more in the field game, but I think certainly, you know, there's plays and boxes, you know, windows that people are passing into that, you know, certainly are better in the field game, or sorry, in the indoor game.
That's interesting. My favorite thing was the constant fear that I had every time I was on the floor, that I was going to be hurt very badly. Can you kind of explain some of the positional differences, obviously defense, transition, and forwards, to kind of like, you know, an American kind of audience? Like, you always want to have this many lefties, this many righties. There's five offensive players on the field at a time, five defensive players. What is your kind of philosophy and how that breaks up, and what are the differences between the positions, and what kind of traits are you looking for those positions for your team?
Well, you always need a balance especially in the offensive zone. You have to have a balance. I mean, you cannot play offense effectively in the indoor game if you don't have that 3-2 split. So you have to have either three left-handed shooting players or three right-handed shooting players, but you have to have that 3-2 split, because we don't, you know, we don't switch hands. It's rare in the indoor game, and we don't literally switch sides of the floor. So left-handed players will play on what would be the right side of the offensive zone, always sticks to net. So the stick is always inside towards the net, and they really, you know, they might cross over in certain situations where they're, you know, they've cut and they're on the other side of the floor, but they will recycle themselves back to the proper side of the floor. So all the offense is run, you know, sort of in that vertical channel where middle of the net over is the lefties and middle of the net over is the righties, and you'll get swings of the balls east, west, or across the floor, but they stay on their sides for the most part. It's not as important on the back end or the defensive end. You can have players playing on their opposite sides. So when we're comprising a team, I mean, you have to look for a certain amount of lefties and righties offensively. Defensively, you would like a little bit of a balance, but we wouldn't make roster decisions based on whether he's a lefty or a righty. I mean, for the most part, you would take who you think is the most effective defensive player. You know, everybody's using a same size stick, a short stick, no long sticks in the indoor game. So there's a real athleticism and awareness on defense and a lot of switching, because the picks that you can set in the indoor game are physical and they're active. So if you're not communicating on defense and switching, you're going to open up a lot of gaps. So different skill sets, a lot of switching, you know, certainly athletes, because you want to be able to transition and push the ball up the floor. But those would be the things you're looking for in terms of, you know, how you comprise your lineup.
Glenn, my observation the last 3 or 4 years is the league has taken a lot of the physicality out of the game. Obviously, it's still a very physical game, but, you know, the muggings, the holdings, the moving cross checks, picks, and it is a better game, faster game, and a much more enjoyable game to watch.
I agree. And there's so much natural physicality in the indoor game that you're not losing anything with, you know, some of the things that they're taking out. And I mean, we're like, you know, all games that, you know, NFL, NHL, real emphasis on the headshots and protecting the athlete, which is good, because a lot of guys from, I'm sure, your generation, Jack, and even mine, you know, you know, if you got a shoulder under somebody's chin and wiped them out, that was a good hit back when I played. And you know, I've got a lot of guys that I know now that, you know, they've got some concussion problems and residual issues with that after the fact. So, you know, we don't want our kids and we don't want these younger athletes to have to go through all that. So that stuff, I'm glad, is out of the game. And they're, you know, we played this weekend and somebody laid one of those hits on a player and he got a match penalty for a high hit. And it was essentially a shoulder under the chin to an unsuspecting athlete, but he had the ball. You know, when I was playing, when we were playing, that was good hit. Everybody pat you on the back. But he got a match penalty in a game misconduct. So I'm glad that stuff's in there. I'm glad some of the off-ball slashing and those things are off out of there, because I don't think we lose any of the authentic physicality that's in it. Like, there's still big hits and cross checks, and slashes, and but they're in the appropriate time and position. So I think with the speed and the physicality that's innately in the game, I'm glad that the league is moving in that direction and, you know, protecting the athletes, making it safer. And I don't think we've lost any of the, you know, the physicality or that part of the game at all.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message. Catch the Sacred Heart University Pioneers on the ice this season. The Pioneers Division I men and women's hockey programs will not disappoint. Season ticket packages and individual tickets are on sale now at sacredheartpioneers.com. And opening in 2023, Sacred Heart University's Martiri Family Arena, a brand new 122,000 square foot premier skating facility in Fairfield, Connecticut. Learn more at sacredheartpioneers.com.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
You You've been a player and a coach for over 20 years in the NLL. You made the transition very quickly from player to coach. What made you want to get into coaching right after you were done playing?
Yeah, in hindsight, I made it too quickly. But at the time, they asked. I mean, I was asked if I would do it. And I was at a stage in my career, I was 37, and I was still playing in the NLL. And I was still playing at a fairly high level. Like, I think I was an all-star that year, and I was still, you know, making an impact on the game. But I was really beat up. I had had multiple surgeries. I'd had, I had a lot of injuries along the way. And I got to the point where I was still an effective player, but I was playing hurt all the time. And I'd certainly lost a little bit of a step because I'd had, you know, reconstructive ankle surgeries. I had multiple knee surgeries, shoulders. I'd had a lot of physical problems. So when I got offered the opportunity to coach, it was a decision because I was actually going to go back and play another year. And it was throughout the offseason that I got offered. And I talked to my wife and I said, you know what? These opportunities are hard to get. So maybe this is the time I should do it. And from a physical standpoint, it made sense. But looking back, it was hard. I mean, it was very difficult to go from player to head coach. But having said that too, there was a lot of lessons along the way. So, you know, you go through this journey and you know, you learn a lot during, you know, those processes. I wasn't a great head coach when I first started. But the one thing I did do was I had a lot of takeaways and, you know, I was very purposeful about getting better at my craft and learning from people that were better at it than I was, learning from the mistakes and watching, listening and, you know, getting better. Because my whole thing is, you know, if you're the same person in 10 years, the same coach, the same whatever, you know, you've done yourself a disservice. So it was a crazy time, but there was value in it for sure.
Coach, during a game, talk a little bit about your role and your two assistants' roles. It's much different than the outdoor game because it's never stops the action. The play is going on, play is going off. As a head coach, what is your role as a head coach during a game? And what are your assistant coaches' roles during a game?
It's very different. And that was one of the things that I got much better at as I went along. When I initially started as a head coach, I was trying to do everything. I was trying to run the offense, run the defense, run the faceoff teams, you know, drop the 6-on-5 plays, drop the power plays. And you lose the larger sight of the game. I'm much better at managing the people now, making sure, telling our offense, telling our defense what I want, you know, making sure we're prepared in practice and video and game plan and game prep, and managing that, and managing the flow of the game. So I'm managing the game, I'm managing the coaches, but I'm letting them, you know, have the autonomy to do their jobs, which I think has been the biggest sort of growth and change and improvement that I made along the way, because I think I was too much into everything at the beginning. You know, I was running practice, I was running all the drills at practice. And when you do that, you lose sight of the bigger picture. So, you know, my role as I see it is managing all of our assets, players, coaches, trainers, equipment staff, everybody. And, you know, trying to make sure that that's as seamless as possible.
When I first started coaching box lacrosse, I found myself, and I don't know if you felt the same way, I was watching the game more than I was coaching the game because everything was happening so fast that I lost track of what was going on the bench.
Yeah, there is that possibility. And you've got to be, it's like any skill or profession. You have to be, you can't just show up and say, oh, I am coaching today. Like it is, you're purposeful. I mean, I'm thinking about the decisions that I need to make and the multiple decisions that I need to make during a game. And I mean, I've got clock awareness plans and all kinds of scenarios pre-played so that when they happen, you understand what the response is. So it's a lot of prep. It's a lot of thought. It's a lot of looking at what are the impactful situations during the game that you can have as a coach, because there are a lot. But you know, to just sort of think you're going to react to them without preparing for them is very difficult. So you need to have that plan. You need to have that, you know, that understanding of what are your impactful moments, and you need to have that in place ahead of time, because there's going to be enough things that you got to react to. So you better be prepared for situations and when you need to make certain decisions. And it's, for me, everything is about planning, practice, game, all that video. You have to be prepared, and then you can react to some of the dynamic things that happen during a game.
Coach, unfortunately, I am too young to have seen Mr. Jack Piattelli play box lacrosse. I'm sure that that you have seen him. Can you describe, give me a scouting report on a young, plucky Jack Piattelli?
Well, to be honest, I didn't see Jack play. I've seen a couple of video highlights and those types of things. But I never saw Jack play. So I couldn't give an accurate scouting report on what Jack's skill set and where he would fit into the modern game, whether he'd be an offensive guy or a defensive guy. That's probably, Jack would probably have to give us the best.
Yeah, what's your player comp?
Well, after watching the videos that, you know, scoring a number of goals, I would be actually more effective on the offensive end of the field than the defensive end of the field. I was actually out on the field once against the Detroit Turbos, and they did a hidden ball trick while I was out there. It was the most embarrassing moment of my lacrosse career. They scored a goal. I'm like, where's the ball? Where's the ball? And next thing you know, it's in the goal.
That's the worst.
It's incredible.
We had that happen in our final preseason game against Rochester twice.
Really?
And they scored one time. And the other time, they didn't execute. I mean, they executed it, but we sort of caught on right at the last second. So they did it to us twice in Rochester. And I mean, lucky it was preseason and the cameras weren't on, because I said, that's not happening again.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you've been with the Black Wolves / Fire Wolves organization since the Black Wolves' second year, and now they've moved to Albany. I'm sure you were part of that transition team, if not fully involved in that decision. Obviously the team was bought by Oliver Marty, and moved to Albany. How was that for you as someone that, you know, keeping the team together, moving an entire situation, and then kind of reconstituting it in this new entity that's kind of the same thing, but not really?
You know what? It wasn't overly challenging. I mean, you're talking to the players. It was a long process. So, you're adapting to the change. You're trying to keep continuity, which we did have with all of our staff and players. And they're fairly pliable. It's a new building. As long as they're being treated the way they felt like they were treated before, and they have, Albany's been great, and they've been down there once, and they loved it. They loved the venue, they loved the arena, they loved how things were set up for them. So the players are pretty pliable, and they're with their group. So it was fairly seamless. The bigger challenge has been doing it during COVID, to be honest, and all the issues that come with the travel and the testing, that's been the larger challenge, and just sort of sorting out the differences in organization in terms of, protocols and expectations. But It's been pretty good. Like, you know, I think it's more difficult, you know, if you go to a different organization. I mean, I think it's more difficult being traded or starting with a, you know, coaching job in a new organization, because you're learning everything. At least our core just moved. So we had that familiarity, and the, you know, the peripheral stuff needed some sorting out, but it was fairly seamless.
Coach, tell us a little bit about your team, some of the new players that have been added since you played at the Mohegan Sun, and some of the players that are no longer with you.
I mean, I think we're the similar makeup in terms of, you know, we've got our goaltending and our defensive bulk back. And that was sort of the cornerstone of our team, was, you know, very good defense, obviously excellent goaltending. Doug won the goalie of the year when we last played, and very athletic, ball moving defense. Our offense is, you know, we lost a couple of really big producers, but we still have the core of that offense intact, and have added some real talented bodies to that, and Jacob Roue and Tanner Thompson and Charlie Kitchen. So, you know, our offense is predicated on ball movement and being active, and that hasn't changed. So I think, you know, if you were to encapsulate what we are, we're fast paced, and we're that way across the game. We're athletic. We move the ball. And we play a high tempo game, and that hasn't changed.
Coach, you have played your first game as of this recording. You don't play again until December 18th. So I think we're good talking about it. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. You dropped it. One goal game against your former team, the Toronto Rock. The game was broadcast because on ESPN, because the NHL has a new deal. So if you have ESPN Plus or you're subscribed to an ESPN service in America, you can watch all these NHL games for the first time. Do you think that's kind of a game changer for how the league is being built and how the league has kind of come back from basically, you know, you didn't have a season last year. You know, it's a great kind of statement piece. So I guess first, your thoughts on the game. And second of all, the impact that being on ESPN will have in American markets.
I think it's huge. And it's also nationally in Canada on TSN, which is, you know, the equivalent of ESPN in the US. So our game against Toronto was broadcast nationally in Canada as well across TSN. So it's huge. When I was playing in the NHL with Toronto, we had all our games broadcast nationally through Canada, you know, TSN and those Sportsnet and those national broadcasters, and we were selling out the building. We were getting, you know, we were averaging 17,000 fans. We'd have crowds of 19,000, and it was like that for years. And getting off TV was a direct correlation to fans dropping and the crowd size reducing. So I think there's a direct correlation to being on TV, getting better audience, getting more eyes on. And I think one of the things it does is it validates the sport, rightly or wrongly. If you're on TV, people go, okay, this is big time. And if you're not, you know, you're not reaching a wider audience, you're not seen as a major sport, and it impacts it. So I think it's going to be huge for a couple of reasons. One, it's going to get eyes on. Two, it's going to get people going, oh, I'm going to check this out live. And when they see it live, the game grabs them. And, you know, from a spectator sport standpoint, I mean, I think it's the perfect game. It's got the, you know, the control and the grace of basketball. It's got the physicality and the speed of hockey. And when people see it, they're like, oh, wow, like you guys are allowed to do that out there. And I think it's going to be huge for the growth of our game, especially, you know, south of the border where a lot of people still, it's a field first mentality. So once they start getting a little bit more exposure to the indoor game, I think it's going to help a lot.
What's the capacity in Albany? And you open up December 18th. So anyone listening, where can they buy tickets? And is it an Saturday evening game?
We have 9 Saturdays. We got Saturday evening every home game, which I think was a huge advantage and score for, you know, George and our group to be able to have Saturday games, because it's sort of the cornerstone day of the week. It's the easiest one to promote, sell, easiest day to get there. So we have 9 Saturday night dates. There's you know, lots of information on the website for the Albany Firewolves about where to get the tickets. Our building, I think, is a 15,000-16,000 seat venue. So it's a good size venue for the NLL. And, you know, they've got a lot of stuff going on in terms of promotions, giveaways. We just announced yesterday that one of the World Series pitchers is going to be at the home opener. He's a local guy that played in the World Series this year. So they've got a lot of different things going on. And all that information is, the website is up and running. Ticket information, scheduling, roster, all that stuff is on the Albany Firewolves website.
I remember talking to some of the opponent coaches back when I was involved with the Black Wolves, and they all talked about the arena size at the Mohegan Sun, and it was smaller than all the arenas, and so they had to adjust to it in different ways on the offensive end and the defensive end. Is the arena in Albany regulation size?
Yeah, it'll be, yeah, it's you know, they had a professional hockey team in there for a while, an American Hockey League team. And I, you know, as I mentioned, Albany had a team years ago when I was still playing, and we played there quite a few times. And it'll be the same as all the other venues, size wise.
So, just quick story, as a field first kind of, like, you know, journalist, writer, I don't cover box and haven't traditionally done it all that often. So I picked teams. Box is my time to relax, right? Like, I watch box. I don't have to worry about stat lines, coaches, interviews, any of that stuff. Any other lacrosse game, I have to worry about all that stuff all the time. And when the Black Wolves left, I kind of put myself out there as a free agent to be a fan, because I am kind of a fan first with the NLL. It's a fun experience for someone that is mostly all business for everything else. And the New York Riptide came a knocking and kind of assured that I would be their fan. But your owner made a good push for it, Oliver Marty. And my make weight with him was, there's a very famous comic book writer that lives in Albany. His name is Ron Mars. He worked on Green Lantern for DC Comics forever. And I saw him at a convention. I was like, I'm going to get you to an indoor lacrosse game, and you're going to be the celebrity fan for this new team in your town that you don't even know about. And it turns out he was a sports writer in Long Island. So he's like, I'm up for it. So yes, I'm technically not a Firewolves fan. I enjoy all the teams, but I technically am a New York Riptide fan. But I got you a celebrity fan, and I want to know, when he goes to your game, hopefully he listens to this, I'm going to tag him when we put it up on Twitter. But I had a full conversation with him about getting him to go to your game. So, and one of the reasons I did that is because the NLL in person is incredible. The energy, the music, the players, and, you know, as Jack has said multiple times, it's nonstop action. Right. So I think, you know, something I want to get out there to everybody, that maybe if you haven't seen Box, maybe you can't necessarily get out to Albany, but you can definitely watch it on ESPN. You should definitely give it a shot. So, you know, if you're trying to bring Black Wolves fans back to go to Albany, what, give me your best pitch for bringing people into your barn.
Well, I think you just pitched it, and it's, you know, it's a dynamic game when you watch it on TV. But there's something about, you can almost feel the speed and the physicality when you're at the game. And the skill of these players, I mean, the plays and the passes they make, you know, you see it on TV from, you know, a camera image, and it's impressive. But when you see it at floor level and you see the speed with which it's happening, and some of these passes are happening before you even know that there's an opportunity for an opening. And so I think the nuances of the game, you know, will be impressive to people. You know, there's a lot of what just happened. How did they do that? But the raw physicality, speed, and dynamics of the game just grab people. I mean, everybody that comes and sees it for the first time is like, I don't know, how are you guys allowed to do that? How is that legal? I couldn't believe it. And you get a lot of those comments, and it's incredible the number of first-time fans that get hooked. I mean, they watch a game and they're like, oh my gosh. Well, to be honest, I remember the very first game our commissioner, Nick Sakavich, saw was an exhibition game with New England and Buffalo. And very first indoor game he'd ever seen. And he came into the coach's room after the game. And he, you know, he's obviously got a vested interest in the game, but, you know, he said, this is like, this is the most incredible product I've ever seen. He said, if I can't sell this, if I can't do a good job of growing this game, I'm not good at my job. So, you know, he recognized it as a first time fan and was genuinely excited about, man, I've just got involved in this game that is absolutely going to blow people away. So it has that ability to grab people right off the bat.
And to your point, there's nothing like watching indoor lacrosse live than on TV. They've done a much better job with ESPN3 covering it with more cameras, you know, so on and so forth. But to be there live, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, it's just got a feel to it, and when you're there, you sense it, you feel it, and it's an energy that's sort of hard to describe unless you're there.
Coach, we got to wrap this up, but I have one question for you. I am coaching my first box team this weekend. I know we like to say real box. It is real box with small nets and no poles and five, all that stuff. We have boards, all that stuff. What advice can you give me that I can use in my first game as a box coach?
Not to show up.
What's the age?
It's high school kids.
I mean, I think the biggest thing with new kids is sort of that floor balance, you know, where you keep your left-handed players on the one side, your right-handed players on the other side, and they all seem to be in a hurry to collapse into the middle.
Yep.
There's a term we use a lot, which is floor balance and spacing. There's advantages to width and depth in the indoor game, especially in box. And I would say floor balance, spacing is one of the hardest concepts for new players to get, because everything just goes crashing into the net and you get this, you know, this collection of bodies all going to the same spot. So I think it's a little bit of patience, a little bit of floor balance, and there's 1,000 things to add, but that would be a good start.
Great job, Coach. Thanks so much for joining us. Really nice to catch up with you. Best of luck during the season. I'll be heading to Albany for one or two of the games, so look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, absolutely. Reach out. Let me know when you're there, Jack.
I will. Thank you.
And that was Glenn Clark. Jack, what do we think?
You can tell he's very well organized. He's a very detailed, orientated guy. Great understanding of the game. And I think that they will have a very successful season with him as the head coach.
Super articulate. Great answers to the questions. I mean, you know, sometimes we book guests and I go, I don't know that guy. I don't know what I'm getting, but it's guys like Glenn Clark, pleasantly surprised.
Very intelligent guy. He's into health, fitness, keeps himself in great shape. Players have a lot of respect for him, not only as a coach, but as a person. And he's the type of guy you want to play for.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate, guys, if you can get to an Albany Firewolves game, have an in-person experience with the NLL, I think you should absolutely do it.
It's a great night out, great action, and there's nothing like it.
Now, before we go, we just want to tease a little bit of a project that we're working on for the next series of podcasts. We're going to go into a round table of recruiting and what recruiting is like on the boys' side going into college and how it's kind of evolving, how it's different, some of the things that you need to know. So you can send in your questions to me at kyle.devitt@laxjournal.com. And also on the site, Mike Z as well. So we're interested in tackling those. And we have a nice little plan that we discussed before we sat down for this podcast. But you definitely want to stay tuned for that. We're going to go over Division I, Division II, Division III, what it means to play for those, playing for club teams, and having, you know, realistic expectations for yourself as a player or for your son or daughter.
Looking forward to it. And the other thing is, you know, we're also going to talk about recruiting camps, how to go about attending recruiting camps, how to select them, what to look for, and be realistic in terms of where you can play and what schools you can actually apply and get accepted through the admissions process.
Now, with that being said, thanks for listening to the end of this podcast. This is New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.